Council meeting for Tuesday, July 24th, 2018 is hereby called to order. I would like to welcome everyone here today. We have a small change to the agenda under 12.4. It states Community Recreation Assistance Program. It's actually waiver of policy 58. So it's the same agenda item, it's just a different name on the agenda. Waiver of policy 58 under 12.4. Are there any other changes or amendments to the agenda today? Hearing none, a motion to approve the agenda as amended would be in order. Moved by Councilor Kelly, seconded by Councilor Fraley. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous, thank you. Under 3.0 presentations, we're pleased today under 3.1 to have Staff Sergeant Derek Smith today to give us a report.
I'll sit here so I don't throw somebody off. Morning, Your Worship. So today, I'm here to talk to council and answer any questions they have. Just a couple of things. Got a bit of a good news report, and I'm not talking about my retirement for maybe some people and whatnot, but I just received here recently our crime statistics for the first quarter of the year, and I'll just go through them with you. Crimes against persons were down 24% in the first quarter of this year. Property crimes were up by 2.4%, and I attribute a lot of that to this spring we had quite a rash of thefts from vehicles, and so that generated quite a bit of work for us. We developed the name of a young fellow that we thought might be responsible, and we went and had a heart-to-heart with his parents, and that seemed to have put an end to the thefts from the motor vehicles. Not that they don't happen every now and then, but the rash of them down. Our domestic dispute occurrences, they're down by 38%. Computer crime is down by 25%, but yet our overall occurrences are up just marginally by 0.8%. So I think we're making some good progress here in Queens County, and I attribute that to A, the residents of Queens County. I'd like to think that we play a role in that as well. But so I think overall that's a good news story for Queens County, and I know that you've heard me say before in this forum and other forums that I think people that live in Queens County are very fortunate to be living here, and I don't say that gratuitously, but I do think it is people that are here should be very thankful that they live in Queens County. So that's the good news story for the first quarter. I know that I spoke to you and council back in March when we were developing our objectives for this year, and so out of all that, we still have a road safety objective where our goal is to reduce serious collisions, and so we established that we wanted to this year have 350 self-generated summary offense prosecutions. And that's just up largely from last year. Last year we ended the year with 343, but basically what I want to do is try to continue on that same vein. We want to increase our check stops, increase our enforcement of distracted driving offenses, which would be cell phone tickets primarily. And I do know that the province is going to undertake a review of the motor this fall. I don't know how long that'll take to complete, but I look at that as a good thing. It'll address some gaps that we see in the Motor Vehicle Act. On the crime prevention and crime reduction strategy, we want to increase our offender management checks. Those are people that are on court-imposed conditions. And last year we had 50 of them, and we found not infrequently people in violation of that, and they got returned to the Queen, shall we say, to be looked after. So we want to go from 50 of those checks to 96. We're going to continue with our youth advisory committee meetings. This is one that was raised by council with me, was to enhance our town hall meetings, go into the communities. So this year our goal is to have 5 of those town hall meetings. I didn't have any in the first quarter of this year just due to logistics. My replacement will be well briefed on that though, and that shouldn't be any problem at all, and I would think that he'd be quite interested in doing that, just to go meet the people of Queens County. We want to continue with our media advisory campaigns. And the other one that which was raised by council that is in our APP is our enforcement of exploitive relationships around drugs, and primarily that's to deal with the situations of people that are supplying our youth drugs in exchange for sexual services. So that's right now, this year we want to try to get one person, one successful prosecution out of that. We've started on that. One of our members just came back from the week-long human trafficking training course. He is, that member is quite highly engaged in the drug enforcement work. That's an investigation that's going to take a lot of source information and asking the right questions to the right people at the right time. But I'm pretty comfortable that we can hit that and probably even exceed that. But I wanted to make sure it was achievable. That member's not really been had an initiative under our annual performance plan before, so I didn't want to overwhelm them at the same time. Our cyber crime. We want to increase our communication strategy with youth and seniors on cyber crime issues. And I don't know, in my report, I had one where I think we're doing a good job. A woman got a call from Publishers Clearing House that she won $250,000. All she had to do was send them $5,000 and to collect her $250,000. And because of some things that she's heard, she declined to do so, but reported it to us. I think we're making some inroads, but it's we still have people that are falling into the too good to be true. I can tell you this story that we had one where a woman was involved in an online relationship, and the subject wanted her to send her some money. She went to the bank to get a money order, and the bank said, this is a scam, don't do it. Bank refused to give her the money. She went through for lack of better terms, the back door and got her money and sent it away. She's out $6,000, and no further head in the relationship, shall we say. It continues to happen. Like I say, the banks and some of the businesses, because we went to every business and said, if anybody comes in and purchases large quantities of iTunes cards or whatever, please caution them, they're probably being scammed. And those were some proactive things that both Constable James and at that time our senior safety coordinator, the Honorable Kim Masland, went to every business in Queens County that sold those cards to make those presentations. And then the last thing on our APP, which is new this year, is enhance our relationships with African Nova Scotian communities and citizens. And so that's a new initiative for us. And not quite certain exactly how we're going to what we're going to do in Queens County yet to achieve that, but those are our goals for this year. I don't know if there's any questions arising on that. It's no news, I know, to this council that as of the 15th of August, or as of the 16th of August, I won't be here. My replacement is going to be a fellow by the name of Staff Sergeant Cliff McKay. He's coming from Northern Alberta, I believe it is. He is motivated to be here. He does not have a house to sell, so that means that that shouldn't be an impediment for him to arrive here. He's so motivated to get here. When he heard that I was retiring, he kept calling me to say, have you signed your papers yet? His wife has family in the city, and she is more motivated to get here than he is, so that means he's more motivated to be here as well. But no, seriously, I've spoke to him several times. He seems like a very down-to-earth person, and so I feel pretty comfortable with who's going to replace me. Corporal Bill Wilcox is retired, as I think a lot of people know. He's been replaced by Corporal John Harris, who came from Lunenburg District. So John will be in charge of Queens District until the new guy gets here. The new guy, Staff Sergeant McKay, does not have a house to sell. I expect him to be here, although he hasn't been on his house hunting trip yet. I don't think it's going to take him very long to be here. He's in forced housing, and so I think it'll just, once he gets here for his house hunting trip, I think after that it'll just be a matter of logistics of getting a moving truck to wherever he's at and getting his belongings moved here. And then the other member that's retired from us, which is leaves a very big void for us, is Rob James, our community policing coordinator. And Rob has done a tremendous job for the people of Queens County. He is retired from the RCMP, and he's, I think, no secret to anybody around here that he's now working for as the assistant to the Honorable Kim Masland. Wish Rob well in his endeavors. And so Rob is going to be replaced by Ron Duffney. And Ron, as everybody I think around here would know, has been in Queens County for quite some time. So he's going to become the new community policing coordinator. And that will kick in sometime this fall, early in the fall, as a lot of the community groups start to ramp up again for the... So we're in the process of trying to staff Ron Duffney's position right now, and I've had some interest from out west for members that want to be here, and so I've offered them a nice house in Caledonia that we own, because I'm working very hard to find a resident for our forest house in Caledonia, but barring that, I have some members also that are much closer to Liverpool that want to be here, so it's not going to be a problem to backfill that position. Like I say, the word is out in all seriousness in our organization about Liverpool, Queens County, and so I don't think it will be a tremendously long drawn out process to have a replacement. And then the other thing is that because we do have some manpower issues with members being off. Without going into it too deep, that have been off sick for a while, we have what's called a reserve constable here working for us. Reserve constable is somebody that had been in the RCMP and was either retired or discharged honorably, I guess would be the term to use. And so we have reserve constable Chris Boardman here. And so he lives in another area of the province, but he comes here for his 5 days a week. He has connections to the White Point area, family connections to the White Point area, so he stays in the White Point while he's here. And so he's been, Chris was a detachment commander and retired from the RCMP with 25 years service out west. And not sure he enjoyed retirement all that well. And so he's doing the reserve constable detail, and he's been here since the end of April. Be my hope that he's here at Christmas time. So, other than that, I do know that I've had some inquiries from various members of council on some traffic authority issues. And I'll try to address those right now. Is that I had the area traffic authority, who's new to his job, over 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and he and I spent a couple of hours together driving around looking at all the issues that were raised. He wants to research some of the things and get back to me. I sort of thought that I would have heard something back from him by now, but I haven't, so I will send him a chaser email. But he's seems to be a really great guy, but he's new to his job, and so he wants just to be sure of exactly what he's saying before he says it. But we've certainly, like I say, spent some quality time together. And as usual, he honored his previous predecessor's thing. I only have to pay him in coffee. So it works out very well. So that's all I have to say, unless other people have some questions.
Any questions or comments to councillors? Councillor Fancy?
Yes, I know you, I'd heard you had some people off sick too along with it. Does that make you, how short are you staffed overall?
Right now, I'd say without going too deep into it, we have three people that are off sick for various lengths of time.
Yeah.
And so we are, where necessary, we're readjusting our schedules, but and where necessary, we're bringing people in from other areas to help cover shifts, to always make sure that we maintain our minimum level of service. And so it does, like I say, it creates some challenges, that's part of the service that we provide, and that does not cost, you know, any of our contracting partners any additional fees. That is, as I know, as you've heard me say before, one of the advantages of us is once you have your annual fee from us, or from the province really, that doesn't go up. It doesn't matter what happens. So whereas some other areas, if they ran into, you know, excessive overtime or whatever, then the impact to your budgets could be more. But it's been a challenge, no question about it. But hopefully we're going to be on the other side of that in the not too distant future.
Councilor Johnson?
First of all, Derek, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
You'll never wish your time away, I guess. But my main question is, we had a gap between when the senior safety officer took her new position and when we filled it. What impact did that have on your force? I know it had an impact on seniors, but I mean just from from the force itself.
So any time that happens, and the advantage of the senior safety coordinator is, as we've discussed, is two advantages. One, as soon as somebody doesn't know who to call, they call us, and then we become involved to whatever extent, because all of a sudden now we've assumed some liability until we can address things. A lot of things that the senior safety coordinator does at the outset are on the doesn't impact us until all of a sudden if their seniors don't have those services, such as helping people set up proper powers of attorney and whatnot, then all of a sudden we end up with situations of people's finances or whatever being pilfered inappropriately or whatever. So we end up dealing a lot more with circumstances. And sometimes when we deal with the circumstances, our seniors think that they're in trouble when the police show up. And so we have to spend a little bit of time developing even those relationships that, you're not in trouble, we're here to help you. But on the flip side of that, people think when, quote unquote, the authorities show up, that maybe they're going to be removed from their homes. And, which puts tremendous extra stress on people that don't need it. I mean, there are clearly some times that we will leave somebody's residence and say they shouldn't be, as far as we're concerned, they're not capable of looking after themselves any further. But that doesn't happen that often. But our senior safety coordinator can get in and build those relationships and find the extended family or find the community resources to help make sure that those people get to remain in their residences, for as long as what they can. And it certainly a challenge to them as well as us. And the other thing is from our perspective, as soon as somebody calls us, we create a file and then we manage the file. And like the simplest of file for us probably has a half an hour worth of paperwork by the time it gets through the initial writing up and through all the supervisory approvals and whatnot. So basically every time the phone rings, there's a half an hour involved, right? For, you know, if we create a file, and we try to do that as often as we can. So the senior safety coordinator is a godsend to us, and no question about it. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, in a roundabout way. Right? It just adds more work where your people are not doing the
Oh, absolutely.
Thing that
yeah.
Should have.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Councilor Kelly.
Hi. One of the things that I deal a lot with in my district and the people that I talk to is speeding. Everyone has a problem with speeding, and I mean, I see it myself because I live in town and, you know, on the side streets. And I took the opportunity to put my views forth with the Traffic Safety Act as well and spread that around, get people to put their two cents in as well when they were asking for that survey about developing the new Traffic Safety Act. I don't know what can be done or what you're doing, but there are a number of people in our community, like when we put those signs up last year to get people to slow down around town, and we were inundated with other people around the community, which I was shocked at how many people deal with speeders on their streets. I don't know if you're continuing with a campaign on speeding in town or what you're doing about that.
We are, and our traffic statistics are up in the first quarter for over last year for our self-generated work. But finding locations in town, some of what happens in town, and I'm not debating whether or not there are actually speeding offenses, some of it's perception. On narrow streets and whatnot, cars are actually driving the legal speed limit, but they look like they're traveling much quicker. And they're much closer to you. But the other thing that we have tried to utilize, although I've run into a bit of an issue, is our speed radar trailer, which we share with Bridgewater Police Service. And as I was explaining here earlier, we have one vehicle with a trailer hitch to tow that around. And Constable James, in his last gesture of goodwill to me, smashed that up on his last night, and he had a deer hit it, and the vehicle's been written off, and so I'm in the process of trying to replace that, and shouldn't say trying to. I've had the vehicle towed to the city, and I'm just waiting for the new one to arrive. But I'm going to get a trailer hitch put on our community policing van. We're not allowed to have trailer hitches put on our regular police vehicles, our fleet managers. I'm not sure what the rationale is. I just know when I called in a panic to get a trailer hitch and to get a new vehicle, they said I couldn't put any on our Tauruses. And so that's been a bit of an impediment. But we are getting a trailer hitch put on the community policing van on the 1st of August. The parts have been ordered. So the appointment set for the 1st of August, and so that will help. I do have the, I had, before Rob's incident with the deer, I had attended Bridgewater Police, and I've got all the electronic stuff that I need to plug into the radar trailer sitting on my desk. like I say, without the radar trailer, or without the ability to tow it around, I've just left it at Bridgewater so that they could utilize it for now.
So you could put a request in for the radar trailer to be put out in Liverpool at a couple of locations.
Yeah, when we get the radar trailer back here, I'll do exactly what we did last year, where I send out to the council to say people in your jurisdictions who are identifying areas, tell us where, and we'll set the radar trailer up in those areas.
Yeah.
And so hopefully this year we'll be able to get the data off of it, and so that we'll be able to generate some reports to see what's what exactly.
But basically what I've been telling people is that, you know, most people don't phone the RCMP because they're like, well, they're gone now. What can they do? I didn't actually see it. Or even if they did, they're like, they're gone now and they didn't catch them in the act. But I encourage them to call each time that there's an incident of it so that they can build up some sort of file about the areas of town where people are experiencing speeders all the time.
I can tell you that that's absolutely the right thing to do. If we're going to go where the squeaky wheel is, we're going to grease that wheel. And so until people, you know, I mean, if you're not calling about speeding, let's say on Pazant Street, well, then we're not going to be there because we're going to go to wherever we think speeders are the problem, where maybe they are on Pazant Street. Or
that's funny. That's where the complaints are coming from.
I just pulled that out of the air. But anyway, no, so in all seriousness, that is, we encourage people to call. And you're right. There's lots of times people are gone. There's not much we can do at that point in time. But we do, as you say, build up the inventory. And so when we're trying to decide where to go to be strategic about our what we're doing, let's go to those areas. And sometimes, in all seriousness, we will go and we'll either, you know, be able to substantiate what people are saying. And sometimes we'll be able to say, you know what, it's not really as bad as what you think it is. And, you know, I mean, but I mean, it is what people's perceptions are, right? And that's, but sometimes we'll then be able to show them what it is.
Wouldn't seem right not to ask you this question as you wrap up your career. When you were here in the spring, we had we talked about councillor priorities, and across the board it was about littering, and yet I don't hear anything on your report about littering. So I guess my question to you once again is, what is the plan and what is happening to address this? I know we're doing a lot on this side, Councillor Fancy and his group. But what is happening on your side?
Constable James was involved in the littering group. And this year we have also, we've laid one littering charge this year since the 1st of January. I don't know what date that was right now, but I do know that we've laid a littering charge. Our focus this year is I wanted to deal with the issues raised that are really more of a risk to human safety and human life. As I think you've heard me say many times, I just don't understand why people litter. I think that they show a complete and utter lack of respect for the community. But on the other hand, right now I think that the human safety or the personal safety of people has to trump that for now. We have included littering in one of our prior annual performance plans, and that was the first year that I was here. But that's the logic behind it, is that you know, that I wanted to try to address really the drug issue with people. Primarily, if we could deal with that this year and have some people's lives restored. We had a case where I think I've reported to people here previously of a young 16-year-old girl from this area, or had certainly went missing from this area, absolutely being trafficked out of the city. And we were able to remove her temporarily from that circumstance. I believe that she no longer lives here, but I believe she's back involved in that circumstance, but we were able to remove her from that circumstance for a few months and hopefully get her straightened away. And I can tell you the details of that case are pretty horrific. So anytime that we can deal with that, that's what I think our focus really has to be.
And I agree with what you're saying to a point. Because next year, if that's not your priority, then it doesn't get dropped. You would never drop that as a priority. So littering shouldn't be off and on. It should be an ongoing process, because that is the problem. It all starts with you guys and laying charges. So I don't think you have the ability just to drop it completely. I think that it needs needs to be a priority. It was a priority for us, and we talked about it in quite deep in some detail. So I would just like to know what is happening in Liverpool with the RCMP and what your plan is, and you know, ongoing plan.
My position would be is that Constable Duffney will be remain on that committee that Constable James was on. Whatever is appropriate out of that committee, I think that that's a proper and appropriate resource. As I've stated before, if and when we get an opportunity to lay a charge, we will lay a charge. Our people are well attuned to it. I would not think that anybody that they find littering should expect to see a warning come their way. I should expect that they should be opening their wallet and paying out of their wallet. I think I agree with you that I think that it's certainly a significant issue. It's as I read the newspaper and follow all around the province. It's not the region of Halifax has a big campaign on right now, and I don't think there's any magic solution to it. I mean, short of increasing our complement of members to be totally dedicated to that, and I don't, I think that that's the, we are doing what we can do, as far as I can see, I mean, short of a dedicated person to it.
Thank you.
Any other councillor? Deputy Mayor McLeod?
Morning. This is the first knowledge officially I've heard of your retirement. When do you expect to be gone at the end of?
The 16th of August, I won't be here.
August, won't be here. Just a couple questions about our officers here in Queens. How many officers, when we're at full capacity, including the staff sergeant, how many officers?
There's 13 officers in our complement.
13 including the staff sergeant?
It's including me.
Okay, so 13.
Yeah.
At present, how many do we have here?
All our positions are, well, actually that's a lie. Now we're at 12 because Rob James' position has not been filled. So that's a vacancy. Although Rob is technically still on the books because he's on vacation until October 3rd. So theoretically we're at full capacity, but we're not. We're down one. But if you include Constable Boardman, the reserve constable, then theoretically we're, I know it's a bit of a numbers game and a shell game, which has taken me a long time in my career to actually, I think you've probably heard me say that. But we have some members that are off sick, a couple of them that offer a very extended period of time. And I'm expecting, hopefully, to see some resolution of that in the not too distant future.
So how many do we actually have off sick?
Three.
Okay. And their position is filled by other detachments providing service, or how does this work?
That's right. So some of basically our schedule is built that to have people off to cover people that are ill, people that are on training, and people that are on vacations or whatnot. So we adjust our schedule and move our people around in the schedule to as best we can, to always keep people from our members from Queens County covering the shifts. But where we can't, then we'll go out to our neighboring detachments, typically Shelburne and Lunenburg, to provide resources, and then we pay those members overtime to be here, and vice versa. Our members sometimes will go work in some of the other areas when those areas have a gap. So it's not ideal, but it is what we do, and to provide our service, our policing service to Queens, and make sure Queens gets, and any other area that we're responsible for, obviously, but to make sure that we get our contracting partners exactly what they're paying for.
Mm-hmm. And that was my reason for questioning, because we have a $2 million plus budget,
yep,
for police enforcement, in addition to some other costs there. And my concern was, we're paying that out. Are we getting full value
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, from my perspective, you are, that we want, obviously, I would love to have my three people here back at work, right? No question about it. I think every employer faces these challenges. It doesn't matter what who you're employing, it's not ideal. I'm not going to argue that point with you, right? We want to make sure that our members also, we don't burn them out on the other end, because people need their time away from work to, for their families and to refocus and come back to work well energized and provide the best service that we can. But I do believe that, you know, like I say, it's part of our service that we provide, that's the region of Queens is in good shape.
Councilor Fancy?
Just one other thing I wanted to mention here, especially since Councilor Frelica brought it up. We've enjoyed a great relationship with Constable Rob James. He's been nothing but terrific with us, working, trying to set up stops and to even hear other people who will complain about different things to go and look at those things. One of the biggest problems, though, is by the short staffing is that, though he is the community policing officer, he has to work shifts, because you're short staffed, he's got to go on shift. So then it in turn means that we have to find other ways and even ask other people. And I haven't always got a great response. Like I know I went up there one day because he said I got to work shift and I have some, could someone else, we were just going to do the stop sign below the RCMP station, and the person said we've got more important things to do than do this. I understand that the drugs and everything else is going on around about, but I still think it's, you know, even though maybe low on the list, could you give us an hour for here? It's not like we're trying to say we want a lifetime. So I didn't like that kind of response. Like, you know, like I said, we got more important things. Yes, they are, but and I'm talking days ahead, not just calling on the same day. I'd like to work a better relationship there. You know, if we have to change things, whatever, but understand that they may be small things, but still an evil.
Yeah. Well, my position on that is anytime that you're not satisfied with the response that you get, come to me or my counterpart. Depends on the pressures of people.
Absolutely.
I mean, in this, typically what would happen with us is that the community policing officer returns to the operational schedule in the summer months, which also helps to, because typically a lot of the community organizations, they wind down for the summer months anyway, but it also then affords us the opportunity to be able to provide our members summer leave. This year, in light of some of our shortages, we moved Rob back onto the operational schedule, I think it was the 1st of May. Instead of, you know, like 6 or 7 weeks later, and that came with a price, you know, so I think that's exactly what you're alluding to, unfortunately, you know, like I say, I'm not happy to hear that you didn't get an appropriate response, but like I say, as I've said repeatedly, everybody has a supervisor. And you might not get a better answer from me, but you might, right? That's all I'm saying, right? I do recognize, in all seriousness, the the work that's being done here in the region, particularly on the littering, so anything that we can do to support that, because I only look at us as it relates to littering as one piece of that puzzle.
Oh, absolutely.
We're only one piece of it. We're not the whole puzzle, but where we can help out, we should be trying to help out.
I just wanted to say that because I don't want to go up there and ask again if I'm doing the wrong thing.
If you don't ask, you'll never get.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Kelly?
One other thing I wanted to ask you about. There were recently, in the last week, and I'm not sure if you recall to both of them, there were two accidents at the corner of Main and Court Street.
I was there yesterday.
Okay, there was a car accident, I think, a few days ago. and then somebody coming from court hit somebody on Main Street, and then there was a pedestrian hit. I guess that was yesterday, a pedestrian hit.
Yeah.
So were you called to the accident as well, or was that handled by the...
No, I was out on the road when that call came in, so I attended the scene.
Oh, okay. So the cars too. I'm just wondering if it was both human error. You think there's something wrong with that corner? That it is a tricky corner.
Yeah. It's too early to say, but I really think that I shouldn't really say about yesterday because, like I say, we haven't finished our investigation.
Yeah. Okay.
Councilor Fisk?
I just want to congratulate you on your retirement, and thank you very much for your services to our family.
Thank
you,
sir.
Totally appreciate your expertise of all the few years you've been here with us, and thank you again.
Thank you, Staff Sergeant Derek Smith, for your presentation, and on behalf of council,
longer.
I'd like to convey our appreciation for your assistance over the past several years, and wish you well in your retirement after August 15th.
Great, thank you. Sorry for being a little longer winded than I think what you wanted, but
happy to have your answer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.
We will move on to 3.2, Region 6 Solid Waste Management, and Alda Walsh is here today to give us a presentation.
A little bag of goodies, thank you. Your worship, council, and staff. Well, this takes a little bit of time to warm up. Does the screen itself have to be? Okay. I'm here to talk to you today, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about EPR for PPP. So I'm going to explain what those acronyms are in a moment. But first off, that this presentation is a sanctioned presentation by the regional chairs, and was asked to be brought to every solid waste management region across the province, and now subsequently is going to municipal councils within those regions. So as your regional coordinator, which covers 13 municipalities along the South Shore, including all of Shelburne County, Queens County, and Lunenburg County, and because the province likes to draw funny shapes, Windsor and West Hants are in my region as well, seven of the councils have requested this presentation. So I'm quite pleased with the response to want the individual presentation. Having said that, many of you here have already seen it. You've seen it at the Region 6 level, you've seen it in Yarmouth when we did it to Nova Scotia Federation of Municipalities. So bear with me, because this is more of an individualized approach to the same presentation. So before we actually try to talk about changing regulation or empowering any change, there's usually a problem that we're trying to solve. So one of the problems that we're looking at is the cost to manage solid waste on the municipal budget. In 2005, the cost was over $70 million. And I use 2005 as the benchmark because, just in fairness, that was the last really expensive regulatory change, which was second-generation landfills. The Queens landfill had to have full containment and a lot more of an expensive sell than what had happened prior to 2005. So $70 million is the cost for across the province. And when I say solid waste management, I mean landfill, recycling, organics, construction demolition. So it's the entire cost, the full cost. In 2015, solid waste management costs were $109,400,000. So that's an increase of over 56% in 10 years. Understanding there's a cost of living, there are going to be some increases, but 56% is unsustainable. To put in perspective of your municipal budgets, approximately 10% of the total cost of municipal budget is solid waste. So that relates to pretty much your roads and fire protection services, keeping it in perspective. So I promised that I would explain what EPR is, so that hopefully is one tool or a potential solution to the cost, to the increasing cost. Extended producer responsibility, and I don't know why that switched on me, it's an environmental policy approach, and it's to target materials so that we actually help bring the cost and the reality of managing that product to the manufacturers or the first administrators of the product. So I'll have some examples I'll show you in a moment. But basically, right now, to manage solid waste in Nova Scotia. You buy something at the grocery store, you own it, and then the municipality pays for picking it up and properly managing that product. It's a linear system. The distributor or the manufacturer only pays to get it on the grocery shelf. We're trying to close that loop and make them responsible for that package or that product all the way to the end of the life cycle. So specifically, we're talking about printed paper and packaging, because extended producer responsibility can belong to many different materials. But we're all quite familiar lately with what's been in the media with the plastic bags, shopping bags, which come in very, I'm not going to show you what where that one was from. but there's a lot of different types of plastics, and unbeknownst to a lot of people, plastic shopping bags are not the only issue. We're having a hard time marketing those, but also clamshells. And cardboard actually is and paper is becoming a recent strain on our system. So the materials that we're talking about, printed paper and packaging, if I try to define it in some provinces where they have it enacted, it's around 20 pages long. Reason being is because they have to define material types and the type of product that comes in it. So examples are some of the things that you would have in your blue bag, typically curbside. Some things that actually might actually be in your garbage bag. Or this one's still recycling as well. But the materials are vast. They're from plastics to metals to styrofoam and cardboard, box board. This slide here demonstrates not only that 80% of Canadian consumers live in jurisdictions that have EPR for PPP, but it also shows that it's coming. It's like it's a wave that's coming. We're either going to be on the front end of it, or we'll ride the wave on the back end. And where I'm going with this is that New Brunswick has already also been having some conversations about EPR for PPP and PEI. Not that there wouldn't be a bad thing if they led it, but Nova Scotia needs to lead this. We've been leaders in solid waste management for 20 years. We don't want to see one of our neighboring provinces bring this in and then have us try to live up to or adhere to the standards that they're going to be working on and developing. Because no doubt if this happens, it would be an Atlantic solution and not necessarily just a Nova Scotia one. So Nova Scotia needs to lead this. So we have been doing at this, I can go back 10, 15 years even, trying to get EPR to some level around, but more particularly in the last 5 years. And in talking to other provinces and within our province ourselves, we have identified some opportunities that could come with an EPR for PPP program. It does improve efficiency. As I pointed out, the plastic bag issue that we've heard about in Nova Scotia, it is worldwide. So the problem is, though, that we're having a hard time marketing it. We're still marketing it, just for the record. Clean plastics, shopping bags, still go in your blue bag. We will still handle them. But in British Columbia, where they have full EPR for PPP, marketing this plastic film is not a problem. It's not an issue that they're facing. Standardized recycling across the province. How many times we hear, well, my mother in the valley doesn't have to. So it would standardize recycling. What it means by that is one of the materials that's on the list is styrofoam. So a lot of places in Nova Scotia do not recycle styrofoam, mainly because you're shipping air around the province. It's lightweight. It's a very challenging material. But it is on the list of obligated materials. It is recycled in the valley. It's recycled in Colchester. It would become something that if you're in Cape Breton or if you're in Yarmouth, you will recycle the product. So it will standardize recycling and take the confusion away from your residents and visitors. Reduces the municipal tax burden. If I use just a high-level math and take the amount of money that EPR for PPP has brought to BC, $14 to $16 million would come to Nova Scotia. So that doesn't mean it's all on top of any new monies that will be coming. It would offset the cost for your blue bag. I showed you figures earlier, $109 million to manage all the solid waste. The blue bag component of that is $25 million. Those figures are from fiscal 2015. So of that $25 million, $14 to $16 million being brought to the table by industry would certainly help hit that bill and help carry the cost of managing that product for sure. In Region 6, it would work out to about $1.3 million. Reduce the market risk. As I mentioned again, plastic film. We are running a risky market right now trying to move that product, but we'll reduce the market risk by putting that responsibility on the industry who created that product to begin with. potential for jobs gained. If, and this here is my own personal opinion, because this is the only way we can tackle this answer. We won't know until regulation comes in. But if industry comes into the Atlantic provinces and decides to make the system more efficient, they may set up one material recycling facility. Currently we have 9. So one material recycling facility, we're under 9 million, under a million population, to manage all the products around the province. They would likely centrally locate it. If they located it centrally, an existing material recycling facility would have to grow to improve capacity, to be able to manage the throughput of improved capacity. So there is a potential for jobs gained. Increased diversion as more materials are added to the program. This is not as significant as much of an impact as it was out west. As we pointed out, we've been in this system for 20 years now. So we're already capturing a lot of materials curbside already. But the example of styrofoam, it would improve the diversion to a certain degree. With opportunities, there's always concerns as well. So I do have mitigating statements to every one of these concerns a little later on. But some of the concerns raised, of course, is the potential for job loss. When I use the example of, you know, perhaps industry coming in and putting one super MRF somewhere centrally located, that means there's 9 MRFs that are currently existing, and MRFs, I should say, material recycling facilities. There are 9 material recycling facilities that may have to downsize or change their structure in order to be able to fit into a new system. So the same thing with stranded infrastructure. Will that those material recycling facilities be stranded, or will they actually just change what the operation of what they're doing? So we are concerned about stranded infrastructure as municipalities. The impact on small businesses, this was echoed very loudly, particularly by the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses, had an issue for impact. And consumers are already paying. That should be the top bullet, but it took a whole consortium to develop this slide, so I didn't, my voice didn't weigh in. But the big thing is, as I pointed out, 80% of Canada is in jurisdictions that are already under an EPR program. That means, and I'll pick on Scott Paper Towels or whatnot, if you're buying Scott Paper Towels here in Nova Scotia, no doubt they've already built in the cost of the program for the larger populated areas like Ontario and BC. So your consumers are paying when they go to the grocery store already in some varied cost for that product. We tested it out by taking some products and going across the country, a toothpaste, Kraft Dinner Box. The price did not change from major grocery chains and Walmarts from BC to Newfoundland. So really that proves that the cost is there, it's built into the price. In 2016, the EPR for PPP program paid out over $367 million across the country. So it had to get those figures from somewhere as a business. So we're already paying, your consumers are, and then they're also paying in their taxes as it gets collected at the curb. So the consumers are paying twice. So the proposed EPR model for Nova Scotia, this here addresses the concerns that were raised, or some of the statements that were raised here, is to use existing infrastructure and human resources. The team that's working on this, the regional chairs, as I mentioned, the presentation sanctioned by them, is putting together a proposal for the minister outlining some of our key municipal principles that, should he bring in EPR, needs to address these concerns. So to use existing infrastructure and human resources, if industry comes in and says we want to put a super MRF in Amherst or Colchester or whatnot, they must submit in their plan how they're going to use already the existing infrastructure we have in Nova Scotia. And if they can't use it, they have to explain why they're not able to use it. Municipalities have the right of first refusal for education and collection. So again, that's in some areas, particularly BC, that didn't have a lot of program development like we do here in Nova Scotia. Municipalities got scared, industry's gonna come in and try to take control. They wanted the option to not sign on. So we wanna echo that option for Nova Scotia in case there is municipalities that would not wanna be part of the program. Maintain or improve the current level of curbside service. When industry comes in and if they decide they're gonna be setting up a program, they're not gonna be allowed to, or we're gonna strongly encourage it, and I didn't bring a glass sample here, I don't think. But in BC, the program came into play, and anything that was glass, so your pickle jars, they want those delivered to a depot. They didn't want them in a curbside program. Reason being, because it gets broken, crashed, it's in your bag with all your plastics, it becomes a safety risk. So they had a good reasoning, but they said, we will not collect a curbside. So we want to stipulate that if there's going to be a change to the program, it's either going to maintain what we have and make it consistent, or improve what already exists. But we don't want to go backwards. We've been doing this 20 years. We know what we're doing. No going backwards. Applies only to residential printed paper and packaging, so that we don't get into the confused materials that large industry produces, specialized plastics and things along those lines, to confuse the system. And allow time for planning and transition. So a lot of municipalities have indicated that they were concerned. They were already in a locked into a contract for collection for 5 years, and if all of a sudden this comes in tomorrow, they would have contract breakage fees and concerns about how they would navigate that. So a plan to come in and allow time for planning and transition. I will let you know, to put it in perspective, if the minister decided to run ahead and put this in legislation tomorrow, we're talking 3 to 5 years before there's anything, because a good 18 months to write the legislation and another 18 months at a minimum for business to be able to submit the plan and have that plan accepted by the minister. So the planning and transition is not as much of a threat as we thought it would be at first, knowing the timeline that we'd have to deal with. And I mentioned that businesses had issues, some small businesses, so the proposed model will also propose to exempt small businesses. So if you have a gross revenue under $2 million, you supply less than 1 ton of printed paper and packaging to Nova Scotia annually, you have a single storefront, or you're a newspaper or registered charity, you would be exempt. So what that means, again, as a list there, about 99% of the businesses in Nova Scotia would be exempt. The fabric of our province is small businesses. This program does not target small business. It targets the Costco, Walmart, the makers of these products, the Johnson & Johnson. It is not, now when I say 99%, because we also, in Nova Scotia, we have Sobey. So they do generate their own brand complements. So there will be a few large businesses in Nova Scotia that are already actually having conversations with us, so they're well aware. It would be harmonized with other Canadian EPR programs. So businesses have asked that Nova Scotia always thinks that, you know, they're the best and greatest. You can't come up and define your own program to suit your own needs. We want the same list of materials that's going right across the country, because that's the way we're going to be able to market our materials more effectively. So we're going to recognize that and do it harmonized. However, again, we're putting our heels in and saying protect our infrastructure and our jobs. So we will put some Nova Scotia nuances in it, but we will harmonize it with other Canadian EPR programs. And monitoring and compliance to ensure a level playing field. In particular, the Retail Council of Canada has strongly stated that they don't want to, if they have some of their larger businesses playing in, and they would be the organization representing most of those larger businesses, they don't want them carrying the full load. They want to make sure that, you know, if there's anybody that's on a threshold level, that they're part of the program as well. They don't want any free riders on the program. And as with any policy, of course, you should follow a natural step. There's three pillars to make sure that you're cross-checking those whenever you're developing new legislation. So the economic, this program does drive efficiencies. It increases the economy of scale and reduces the municipal tax burden. That's the economic benefit. The environmental benefit, it drives design for environment, closing the loop and increasing diversion. And the social, it is a corporate social responsibility, bringing industries to the table as part of closing that loop and making them responsible for their packaging to society. So next steps, as I pointed out, Regional Chairs is behind all of this. So they, up to date, developed this presentation and some key messages. I'll leave these behind. I think they may have been circulating email as well, but feel free to go far and wide with those key messages that we've developed as well. So going forward now is to have this presentation to the municipalities, to the regions, garner any feedback, conversations that are had, do the same with businesses. We haven't quite got there. We're developing the toolkit for the businesses, hoping to do that before the end of summer. Like I said, we've been talking to them at a higher level, but to sit down and engage their feedback. And then we're going to take both of those feedbacks and conversations and form the proposal to the minister. At that point, Nova Scotia Federation Municipalities is going to take the proposal back to every municipal council and request a motion from every municipal council on going forward once we have a little bit more concrete outline about the context of the proposal. So that's the presentation. If there was any questions through you, Your Worship, or Council, I'll be open to taking them.
Thank you.
Bonnie Bauda, Boss of Team. Hope things are going well.
Yes.
Good. I just have a question, and I know I've been sort of somewhat familiar with the program and attended some of those sessions that you indicated in the introduction to your morning discussion. And I'm thinking about industrial products such as the disposable gloves at hospitals, those sorts of things. Like those seem to fill our landfill tremendously, and they're every day. I have no idea the quantity of them. How are things like that going to be dealt with from the manufacturer point of view?
They don't fit into the program at this point. At this point, there's a lot of materials that are just residential.
Yeah.
So that's not even being captured or considered.
Yeah.
Having said that, there are extended producer responsibility programs that exist for electronics and for, say, dairy packaging.
Okay.
So
sectors,
there is sectors, so perhaps there could be something with the medical or the biomedical
mm-hmm.
field going forward
waste.
On reducing waste and being responsible for materials in that sector,
mm-hmm.
for sure. At this point, it's not on our radar. Biomedical waste is definitely on our radar when
yeah.
we're receiving it. But as far as from a policy perspective, it's not something that's being looked at right now. So,
so when you go back to your program, your EPR program, just give us a little bit of insight into how does this work? The manufacturers pay a price, which is included in, you say, in a product now, but we do not have a program in Nova Scotia that works with that, right?
Correct.
So where does that money go? Like, do they pay municipalities for handling their waste? Is there a section of that, like, from the financial aspect of it? How do we benefit other than reducing or helping to pay for the cost of the waste that they create, and we're dealing with it here from our tax dollars?
So it'll be on an individual contract by contract basis. There's an organization that represents the larger businesses that are paying into this. Not to keep on throwing acronyms out, but CSSA, the Canadian Standard Stewardship Alliance, and I might have messed that up, but it's Stewardship Standards Alliance.
Yeah.
But they represent these large businesses, and they have come up with a very easy to use, streamlined electronic way. A business plugs in how much waste they produce, et cetera, and it spits out the end how much they're obligated to pay if they produce any obligated materials at all. So they pay them. And through them, they distribute the funds directly on the contract basis to the individual area. So it might not be an individual municipality. In this case, it would be. But some places, say Shelburne Shared Services, might be a conglomerate of municipalities that actually sign an agreement with them. And they agree on a price that would be paid for managing those blue bag materials. The agreed upon price is based on the efficiency of the system. In other words, they might negotiate and say, well, we're not going to pay for you to be collecting in a pickup truck and driving and hauling a cage behind you. We will pay the cost that it would be for a rear packer or something equivalent, more running a more efficient route kind of thing. So there is some negotiating, but it would be on an individual basis by the organization that works on behalf of the businesses with every municipality. In other words, there's no arm reaching in from the government, as there is with diversion credits and other things. It is directly with the service providers, the municipalities, or the areas that form shared
so
services.
By the realms of Region 6, basically.
Correct,
except
yeah. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So, and again, that's part of the conversation we're also bringing back. Some are suggesting that we should do it as a province, but like through the municipalities, the municipal board, or something along those lines to be able to do it. And to give you an example, right now, for those that don't know, milk containers are collected, and there's a cost submitted annually to the province for managing that material. And every year, the chair sits down with the dairy industry and says, here's how much it costs us to manage your product. And he comes back and questions the figure, what went into the figure. At the end of the day, signs a check. Region 6 gets a check directly from the Atlantic Dairy Council. We don't get it through Environment, through Divert. It just comes directly to us, and we distribute it directly to our municipalities based on the tonnage that they collected and paid for. So there's different ways of working it, but it is directly to the municipalities and no other level involved.
And just one other thing. The education of the public then really has to be more available. Like a lot of people, and this is basically when we put things in a blue bag and we sort and we do all the work at home and then it goes out to the curb, there's always a question, does it really go for recycling?
Mm.
Does it really go into the landfill? You know, that, and those are fair questions.
Yes.
So the more that we educate our public on really what happens with those products, that we're working hard from our own residential location
mm-hmm.
to help work, help this program work.
Mm.
So, I mean, do those milk cartons go to somewhere and are they recycled or do they just go somewhere and they're paid for us collecting them? So what happens to those milk cartons when they're put in?
They are recycled. They actually are kept as their own sort. So they're not lumped in with all kinds of
industry?
No, no, they actually are marketed to, it ends up becoming pure white paper actually, but it
okay.
is marketed not
yeah.
in Canada.
So it would be interesting then in the future to say, take specific
exactly.
products and then so this is the end result of what we are doing from
yeah.
the residential aspect.
Yeah, so through the EPR system, some of the costs that we submit, again, it's not just to collect the blue bag,
mm-hmm.
it's to educate on the blue bag, it's to enforce on the blue bag, it's to market the blue bag, or bring it to a first material recycling facility for it to be marketed. So there's a series of streams that we'll be looking to get the funding back for.
Okay.
So it would cover the cost. Our education budget is folded into that $25 million figure that I mentioned. If it relieves some of the stress on that, there'd be a little bit more opportunity in the municipal budget then to put more focus on developing those campaigns
okay.
more streamlined, instead of just trying to keep it on targeting and
yes.
getting the system going. And meeting the bare minimum with the costs exploding the way they are.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to better manage our budgets when it comes to the solid waste side of things
yeah.
as well.
Councilor Friendly?
You had mentioned that this is a wave coming across Canada. You also mentioned that, so that it's the Atlantic provinces that aren't included, correct?
Correct.
And everyone else is.
Pretty
you
much.
Also mentioned during your presentation that municipalities have the option to kind of not jump on board of this. What does that look like if you don't do that? Because it's eventually coming our way, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if we do not decide to?
So I do have one example, and it's, again, BC, because they're the only ones that have a full program right now. But when they first came on side, there were a number of municipalities that said, no, don't want your stuff. Once the EPR for PPP program was on board and on the ground for a year, some of those municipalities outside looking in, so we'll wait now. It's actually working. So we want in now. So and all of them did. So it wasn't just, you know, one odd. They realized what the opportunity they were missing out on. So they said we want in, and then the industry said, no problem, we'll get back to you in 3 years. Because it takes that much time to figure out the volumes of materials through audits that are being produced in those municipalities, to incorporate the cost of that into their system, and then to figure out how they're going to properly manage that material. So because they were late coming in, it would take that much longer to implement. I don't know what it would look like rejecting it on the front end, other than you just don't sit and negotiate with them and you keep doing things that you're doing. It might get a little bit more expensive, because right now, managing blue bag materials is a volume-based system. As I pointed out, 9 material recycling facilities for under 1 million population is just not sustainable. So one, even with under 1 million, is still going to be kind of tough. So we're thinking we might have to look at an Atlantic Canada approach. So if you decide that you're a municipality that just says, no, you go ahead, I'll keep managing it myself, you'll probably even struggle more with those markets. Because everybody, you can't even piggyback somebody else's market. Pretty much, or you're going to have to sell at a higher price to those markets already going. So again, it's all about the marketing, the material, and some of the risks that we take with the recyclables, especially in the recent wave of the China sword.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot more challenging. So what it looks like on the front end is just basically probably keep things going, just make it a lot more expensive. But on the back end, then if you decide a little bit later, you'll be even much later being able to be brought into the program. You can't just change your mind and come in.
I think the challenge for everyone is to look at big picture,
yeah.
10 years, 15 years
and that's
down the road.
The, yeah.
And I know there's things happening with landfills that are in the future for us. But, you know, it's looking to be environmentally conscious for our grandchildren and making sure that we're doing the right thing. So
absolutely.
Always a struggle with what's happening right now and the way things are set up with the future. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
Councilor Johnson?
Well, one of the things you mentioned was
through you, Mayor, I think, again, I have to give a personal answer on that one, Councilor Johnson, because I'm not sure, we won't know those answers until a plan comes into place. All we can do is put these bullets in front of the minister and see what they're going to write. However, studying EPR as much as I have and with the knowledge, so a personal answer is, I would see if industry come into Nova Scotia tomorrow, or come into Atlantic Canada tomorrow, our first challenge would be making sure they set up in Nova Scotia and not in Moncton or somewhere. We want to keep it, so keeping the infrastructure in Nova Scotia. By leading the way, we might be able to have a better handle on doing that. So for the region of Queens, you're strategically placed beautifully for the whole western end of the province. So your material recycling facility could translate its function to being what's called a pre-processor. Instead of being a fully functional recycling facility, would probably receive all the fiber, and I mean by paper and cardboard, from the western end of the province, pre-process it and bale it here to ship it to the Super MRF. So you wouldn't lose shop, but you might lose the current function and what's going on at your recycling facility right now. Landfill is unchanged because it's not targeting landfill. It's only targeting recycling, the blue bag. Organics won't change because, again, that's not in the blue bag. We're just looking at the blue bag. So your recycling facility, the building you have out there right now, could modify to be a pre-processor instead of a recycling facility. Would that impact jobs? How many staff are at the recycling facility now, Scott? 8. So it's possible you might only need 5 if you're being a pre-processor versus 8. So the scenario of potential job loss could still happen. But if industry comes in tomorrow and they have to use all existing infrastructure, that's how I see that they would strategically use what's already in place to benefit their overall plan and maintain efficiencies and volumes and all that other good stuff. But again, that's a Valda Walsh answer.
No.
We won't know unless a plan actually comes, until industry submits a plan, and they're a lot more smarter and business-wise than I could ever pretend to be, so.
Valda, for the people who collect blue bags today who don't sort and mark it, does it just go into the landfill, or are they sorting and sending it somewhere and not getting any benefit for it?
So you actually, material recycling facility for Queens is actually part of that scenario. So Shelburne, all of Shelburne County, Barrington, Clarks Harbor, they don't have facilities like you.
Right.
And they bring their material to you, so it's not going to the landfill. It is being sorted and baled and then shipped to market. In some ways, even though it's shipped to market from here, it's really brokered to another supplier that then further might break open the bale and take some more value of it or process it in a different, pre-process it in a different way before it actually does go to market. So in answer to your question, none of this is allowed. I wouldn't say every single material, but we have a banned list in Nova Scotia by the government. We're not allowed to send this stuff to landfill, so it has to go to a recycler in some way, shape, or form. So that scenario wouldn't happen. The thing is it's an easier decision for them to make. They don't have investment in infrastructure and the human resources that, say, Queens would, so they could, with their hands down, move ahead with EPR and do it now. So.
Yes, Val. Also, too, we probably about a month or two ago on the news, it had up in Halifax where they were making pieces of 2x4 out of plastic, and so they said it was a great opportunity since China was no longer taking the plastic that they were using this as an opportunity to do this, and they could have done it before, but they didn't have the plastic, so they looked like they were looking for more volumes. Is this something that's developing, or is it just kind of a thought?
It's a very creative entrepreneurial spirit that exists here in Nova Scotia. So yeah, plastics was in the news. So immediately, I think the firm you're talking about is C&D, Halifax C&D, run by Dan and his son Mike. And they've been actually making plastic lumber for quite a while, long before this. But it was a perfect time to get in front of the media with their decision or their initiative. If EPR came again tomorrow, that would only help their cause because it would segregate the plastic cleaner more efficiently. It would command the volume in a more streamlined way instead of going to several different, secret markets here and there. It would act, and I mean secret as in we don't want to share the markets because we saturate the market. But yeah, it would actually only help their cause because industry would actually say, why would I want to pay to ship it somewhere down the Eastern Seaboard if I have a solution right next to the recycling facility within a certain kilometer buffer to make something out of it. So, yeah, it wouldn't hurt any private businesses from coming up with a great idea to spearhead a solution in Nova Scotia. It would help it.
Okay, thank you. Councilor Fisk?
Well, just, it might be a stupid question to ask. Anyway, plastic bags, the grocery bags in the grocery stores, why aren't the largest stores using the paper bags that they used to use years ago?
Yeah, so...
Because it is a problem.
Yeah, I have no, I can't answer that. I don't own the chain. But I would say it's cheaper to ship them. Paper is very weighty, it's very dense. Plastic bags, you can get a lot more of them shipped around than you can paper. The onus ends up being with the consumer to make that choice.
You do realize it is a problem.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, you can ask. You're supposed to be able to ask at any place.
You think it's not a problem?
No, I don't think it's not a problem. I do think it's a problem for sure. Yeah. I think any bag is a problem. You know, you can have your reusable bags. You don't need paper, plastic, biodegradable.
I understand the reusable bags. I understand that.
Yeah.
But if there's a lot of plastic, it's in the store.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, more so than the reusable bags.
We can't avoid it.
Bags.
Yeah, we can't avoid it. Yeah.
But you've opened up my eyes a lot today. It helps me.
Hopefully in a good way.
Good. Thank
any
you,
other councilor have a question or comment? Councilor Cho?
On the proposed model that you had up on the screen, you're proposing that it use existing infrastructure and human resources.
Correct.
That is what we're proposing to them. Has that worked in other provinces? Like, are they able to dictate that as part of the negotiations, or is that our wish list of how we'd like to do it?
It is our wish list. However, there's no other province that already had the extent of existing infrastructure and program definition like we do here in Nova Scotia. We've been doing it for 20 years. The other provinces are so new. To them, it was, you know, a savior. Go ahead, set up shop down the road from us. It's good. So there wasn't the risk of losing their infrastructure. We have a lot of it, to the tune that it might be too much, but let business come in and see what would work for them and maximize and use every bit that they possibly can. And if they can't, they better tell us why or how they can't. So,
sure, so you feel like that's, they would listen to that?
They definitely would listen to that. You know, Queens, definitely you're looking after, you're protecting your own infrastructure here. But there are some municipalities, like I'll use Colchester as an example, or even Halifax, that have a significantly more costly investment in that infrastructure even. So, and again, it doesn't matter, it's all relative. You put millions of dollars into infrastructure, you don't want to close the door tomorrow. So it's very important. So the province will definitely listen to that that bold statement that we're putting in the proposal.
Okay. So the step for us, should we decide to be part of it, who's going to fight for our infrastructure? Is that going to be Region 6? Is that going to be the chairs? Is that going to be us? Like what would be the next step?
So the only thing we could do, because once we get the proposal forward, it's out of our hands, and our hands being the regional chairs and all the feed that's happened. We have also requested that the process be recognized once the minister has a draft regulation, that they come back to us and tell us what's in that draft regulation. If the process doesn't allow that, because we know that there's been some changes with policy allowing that, that when the minister is receiving the plan from industry, that we have an opportunity as municipalities through the regional chairs to see that plan and to give some feedback to ensure that that plan does protect what we've been asking. There's been a little bit of a shift lately that we're seeing that happening. The electronics products regulation just had to be renewed, and the resubmission of the plan, sorry, the paint, not the electronics, the paint program, and the plan did come back to the municipalities at the regional level. We fed some comments about some of the details of it back through, and the minister actually rejected the original plan and requested them rewrite the plan and submit by a certain date. So I feel like there is an opportunity that we're at the table and will be listened to, but we really don't know. Once we submit the proposal, it's out of our hands. So.
Thank you, Balda, for your presentation today.
You're welcome, Mayor.
Interesting.
Wonderful.